Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another fantastic episode of Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm your co-host, or at least one of your co-hosts, Matthew J. Haas. And as always, with me is my partner in crime, Mr. Tim Vickers. How are you this week, Tim?
Very good. Very good. Ready for another show.
Good. We have a great topic tonight. Actually, a few topics that kind of are all entwined into one another. No guests tonight. So you have a whole hour and a half of Tim Vickers and Matthew J. Haas tonight. I hope you can deal with us for a whole hour.
Hope you can last for a whole hour. Hour and a half.
But I have a good idea, Tim. I know like it's really hard for people to like chat with us during the chat room on Friday nights because of happy hour. So let's have happy hour at Paranormal Talk Radio.
You serve the drinks.
Bring your drink with you. You know, sit down at the computer and chat with us in the chat room while you're having a glass of rum or, you know, whatever floats your boat. And we'll have happy hour here at Paranormal Talk Radio.
Sounds good.
So welcome back, everybody. I'm glad to be back this week. I'm in a great mood. I start my new job soon. So for those who know me, I've been out of work for some time. And all I know is it's just going to be feeling really good to working again. So I can't wait for that. And I'm excited about that, and I'm also excited to talk about the things we have to talk about tonight. We thought we'd throw in a couple of really cool topics, which is kind of big right now. We're going to talk about what cynics are, what skepticism is, and I did a little research on the history and origins of the ghost EMF theory.
I am excited to hear.
Yeah. I did a little homework, you know, because I was a little curious myself. I've always wondered who was the first person to really come up with this theory? It sure as hell wasn't Ghostbusters.
Scooby.
As smart as the man is, and as much as I admire his research and his past work, Hans Holzinger is not, you know, one of the people to do it. There's quite a few renowned people in the field who've done a lot of research on this type of equipment and, you know, the whole series with EMF and everything. But Michael Persinger is a popular researcher, well-known researcher. So I'm going to start with that before we get into the other stuff. So there's a lot of material here that I want to get into. I know a lot of people follow Michael A. Persinger's work. He was born June 26, 1945, and he is a neuroscience researcher, and he's been a university professor with over 200 peer-reviewed publications. He has worked at Laurentian University in Sudbury, Ontario, Canada, since 1971. And he is primarily notable for his experimental work in the field of neurotheology. I can't pronounce this word. Neurotheology. Okay, I think I got it. It's a tongue twister. Work which has been increasingly criticized in recent years. But what he's also well known for is his research in parapsychology. Persinger has published reports of rudimentary telepathic communication between pairs of subjects in the laboratory. He has also published increases in remote viewing accuracy of remote viewer Ingo Swann as measured by a group of ratings of congruence between Swann's drawings and the local being viewed by 40 experimental blind participants during stimulation with complex magnetic fields using a circumcerebral around the head 8-channel system. So this kind of work, I think, is where the use of the EMF meters, you know, and all the little gadgets with the blinkety-blinky lights and that we all use, you know, I think he was pretty much the first in the 70s to really use this kind of technology.
Well, maybe at least the first to look at the at the relationship between external stimuli and brain functioning.
Correct.
He did the God helmet, didn't he?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of like that. I'm not sure exactly what if he is implying with the God helmet that paranormal experiences are external in nature and triggered by external sources such as high geometric or geomagnetic or any other type of electromagnetic effects, or if he's saying that the presence of something that causes those type of fields by their mere appearance, i.e. a ghost, causes the brain to see it. So it's pretty interesting. I would imagine that my first guess would be more along the lines of it, which I find much more interesting. Kind of like what you were just saying.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, for any other reasons, why you should carry an EMF meter, maybe.
Yeah. There's, I don't know, I'm hearing a little bit of echo in the background. If anybody is having any audio problems, please let us know as soon as possible. You can email us, paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com, or message me on Facebook. I hear a little bit of echo going on, so on my end. Tim, I don't know if you hear it. Do you hear it?
Nope, no echo.
Okay. I think we're okay, but I heard a little bit, so it could be on my end.
Might be a ghost.
Could be. Could be a demon.
It's probably a demon.
So, all right, another article I have here, which is actually on the ParanormalSocieties.com website, which is a popular website. Everybody puts their team information on this website. It's kind of like a directory of the paranormal. And
awesome.
Yeah, and there's a fellow here named Bill Cogswell. I hope I pronounced his name right. That wrote this article about and the origin and how it all came to be. You know, he also states here a little bit and resources a little bit of Michael Persinger's work. So I'll read a little bit here what he wrote. So I'm crediting this person, this Boxwell person, if I have his name right. If not, I apologize. The theory is also backed up by scientific studies involving the number of reports of paranormal activity in conjunction with EMS. One study was done by Dr. Michael Persinger, professor of psychology at Laurentian University, Ontario, Canada, and says Dr. Persinger was inspired to conduct his study based on a previous study which he was involved with. In this previous study, Dr. Persinger compared 37 years of haunting incidents reported in Fate magazine to geometric activity occurring on the same dates as the reported incidents. He found enough correlation between the two that he began his own study in order to further develop this theory. So that's just a little tidbit. If anybody wants to read the whole thing, you can go to paranormalsocieties.com, go to their articles, and it'll come up.
Mm-hmm.
And
correlations. It's very interesting to me. Just like you said, I too would like to know who picked up a EMF meter and just went, I bet when these things beep, there's a ghost around. Probably somebody that did some research like this. So I won't be too hard on it. I like the use of correlation is interesting to me. You know, correlation isn't causation. However, sometimes it's kind of neat. It gives you a direction to look. I like the idea of external things causing false positives. In this case, the false positive would be the conclusion would be a ghost or a spirit or something or a demon. But I still find it interesting, regardless of whatever the end result is that when you have a high magnetic area that people tend to make reports or claims of paranormal activity. I like that. It's a good place to start. That's the type of stuff that I find interesting. I don't think that you can conclude anything from that, but I think it's a really good place to start some hypothesis and design in ways that you can test those and see what you come up with.
I think we should get in touch with Bill Hyland, and this should be our next experiment. I think we should experiment the EMF theory.
Uh-huh.
I think Bill should come up with some kind of gadget that we can test.
And you'd have to subject somebody with hot magnetic fields.
Yeah.
And you'd probably want their permission first.
Of course. But in all honesty, though, I can see that because I've had a couple of cases, private residence cases, where I had a lady who I think was very sensitive to EMF. I mean, not only was she sensitive to EMF, she was also living next to a power plant, like with power lines and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a whole slew of medical issues on top of that. So I'm just like sitting there, all right, I can't rule out the fact that A, she's got a handful of medical issues, and B, she's got a power plant right next to her freaking house. And, it's a known fact that EMF can cause sickness to people who are sensitive to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking high levels of EMF. I'm not talking just
right.
A small number.
Right.
A small number like a clock radio or a cell phone or, like little gadgets aren't going to affect you in that way. Major appliances will, like your stove or a refrigerator, an electrical box, pipes in your basement that are wired and attached to your electricity, things like that,
mm-hmm.
power lines and, gas lines, anything like that. So I think that's where a lot of investigators, when I was brought up into the field, like I always argue this, that where if you go into a home or in any investigation, we were brought up as let's rule those things out because, there are a lot of effects on people with a high level of EMF. And if we rule that out, at least we know, this person is experiencing all these things because of that particular reason. And we're not going in there to say that, a ghost isn't in there, but we're making the person feel more comfortable knowing that they're feeling these sensations because of those things, logical things.
Mm-hmm. Something that they can have control over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that kind of comes from the loss of control in the unknown. is a lot of the stress with people. And I think once they find out a cause, it reduces a lot of stress.
Absolutely. So that's basically, the origin, well, not the complete origin of EMF. The person who actually, I have another thing here. I got rid of the window. I'll have to get it up again. Bear with me. The scientist who actually first came up with the concept of the physics of EMF, and his name is Michael Faraday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yeah, I've heard that name once or twice.
Hence the Faraday cage.
Physics. Yeah.
Michael Faraday, he was an English scientist who was contributed to the fields of electromagnetism and electrochemistry. His main discoveries include those of electromagnetic induction, diamagnetism, and electrolysis. Did I say that right? Although Faraday received little formal education, he was one of the most influential scientists in history. It was by his research on the magnetic field around a conductor carrying a direct current that Faraday established the basis for the concept of the electromagnetic field in physics. So he was the man who pretty much came up with, the idea of, the electromagnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall correctly, I might get this wrong because it's been a little while, but I believed he showed a relationship between powering something just with the field generated by a magnet.
Yes, and believe mm-hmm. it or not, Benjamin Franklin, a lot of his work is based off of Michael Faraday, and so is Albert Einstein. A lot of them, well-known scientists. Faraday was a major influence with his work over these people.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of Benjamin Franklin's work was inspired by. So
everything always, yeah, everything starts somewhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I always wanted to know where that term Faraday cage came from.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So. Hence, Michael Faraday and the EMF. So basically the whole idea of the Faraday cage is to block. The idea is to block radio frequencies. I don't know if it can completely block EMF because, you still have holes within the cage. It's not completely solid unless you have a solid metal box. But, that's where a lot of people came up with that idea. So pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, again, I always enjoy that, and that kind of stuff, however, still leads me to an end result. And I do enjoy reading the research. Of course, I'm sure Faraday wasn't all about hunting ghosts at the time. However, some of his work can be used for different hypotheses and working with different equipment around the idea of investigating, it still brings me to a point that it doesn't give cause. It gives a rationalization. And this is kind of my opinion. As an end result, so you have magnetic fields disturbing your brain, maybe causing different types of stimulus inside your brain. And you see things, you hear things, you feel things, maybe even at some point it could cause some type of hallucination. I think the God helmet was part of that, people seeing and feeling the presence of a supreme being and different people, seeing different people in the room, feeling like somebody was else in the room. I've seen that study. I've seen people discuss a lot about the God helmet and as it relates to the paranormal. And the question that I see most of the time is, did the God helmet cause the hallucinations, or did the stimulation to the brain cause invoke, maybe is a better word, an ability to perceive what is around you? So, you know, which is it? I don't know. So it's either one is kind of like lowering the shields so that your brain and the rest of your senses can perceive what's around you, which might be God to some, which might be a ghost to others, or is it the cause of seeing what some people perceive as God and what some people perceive as ghosts? I have to say, you know, my leaning is that the stimulus, the external stimuli, is what causes the reaction.
It can still be manipulated by something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think if you can repeat that,
yeah,
and I'm pretty sure that that is repeated. I'm sure that has been repeated. I don't know if it's been repeated successfully. However, I see some people say that it has, some people say that it hasn't. I've certainly not read all the reports or all the reviews or all the tests that they have tried to replicate it. It would be more sensical to me, from what I understand, from just reading, that external stimuli would cause a sensation of a haunting rather than enable your brain to perceive what's around you instead of causing the sensation of what's around you.
Right.
Yeah, that just seems, it seems more plausible that the stimuli would cause the hallucination, not allow your brain to interpret what's around you that you couldn't see unless the EMF was going off.
Right. And then I think there was a recent article out there, which I think you've probably seen, Tim, and it's been floating around quite a few times out there on social networking, but they, I think, got the idea of the God helmet idea, where a group of scientists have, you know, experimented with building these machines or computers or artificial intelligence, whatever you want to call it, that they were using. I didn't read the whole thing, but I know a lot of people are talking about it, and they can manipulate the brain into thinking that there is a presence in the room, you know, by, you know, these devices or computers or whatever they're using. So not so much the God helmet, but there was, you know, scientists using different machines and devices that could also probe that stimulation, you know, into thinking there was a ghost in the room. So I think that's like kind of along the same lines of what you were trying to talk about. So,
yeah. And again, not to venture too far away from the topic where we were kind of going with, you know, where did this EMF stuff kind of originate from? Especially, you know, if out of those designs, if out of those ideas came the idea of, well, what we're seeing is electronic stimulus to the brain will cause these things. I can see where someone would want to pick up and test in alleged haunted places if there is an abundance of magnetic fields or electronic, you know, electromagnetic fields, and they would want to make sure that's not a cause of a haunting.
Right.
I get that. So along those lines, and I kind of think this is where stuff gets a little into the woo side of it, is where did it make the leap that seeing an elevated reading of a, you know, an EMF would indicate the presence of a spirit? You know, how did that get turned around?
Right.
That's interesting to me too. Probably just out of practice, and probably, you know, here I go, you know, but this is my opinion, probably out of people that are using it, and eventually at some point, just like, a sped up analogy of evolution, you know, somebody makes a change. There's one person that makes an error, or maybe several people along a stretch make tiny errors and their understanding of what they're doing, and that leads to a complete misunderstanding of the use of an EMF meter.
Right.
And because that's popular, and I have to say, you know, my viewpoint is, you know, ghost hunters, people that want the immediate feedback will seek things that give them immediate feedback. And, you know, an EMF meter that beeps in the middle of nowhere at a random rate of consequence gives people immediate feedback. And if that's what you're looking for and that's what you're told, I think, why would you not believe it? Especially if you've paid a lot of money for that. And that's the result you're looking for, because it's thrilling. And once that starts, and once people jump on board, and, you know, somebody's going out ghost hunting and somebody hands them an EMF meter, and, you know, nobody is quite sure how they work. Nobody is quite sure what they measure, how they measure. But what they're told is, hey, when this thing beeps, you're standing next to a ghost. So when that happens, that's a really big thrill. That's a very big reward. It's a very big reward for people that seek thrills, that enjoy that type of thrill. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I too like that kind of stuff. You know, I like being scared and having fun in places like that. But I can see the connection where that would get picked up and twisted. I think what we're talking about at the beginning, what would be a really good reason to look for high EMFs in a house, and finding them, fixing them, and getting rid of the problem. I can see the jump from that to the mistaken, hey, you have an EMF spike, so therefore you have a ghost, and we can't help you anymore. So, but hey, sign this release so we can put so we can put this on our website, right, where everybody can say, nice catch, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of bothered me about that whole thing, though, being like into the serious side of the research. And what bothers me about the whole EMF thing is, I understand going in and, yes, finding a plausible explanation for that person if you know, they're being in a high EMF level area, and that's the cause of the haunting, and you're going in there and you're telling that person, you know, listen, you got power lines, all your appliances are reading high numbers, you know, your electrical box is off the grid, you have this and that, you know, this is what's affecting you, that's great, you know, because you're finding plausible, logical explanations. It's not automatically a ghost. But then you have another handful of people who aren't, you know, thrill seekers, and who are not just your random ghost hunter sitting in a group, you know, doing a random EVP question, and they're sitting there and, you know, they think by a meter, you know, jumping up by a couple of numbers on the meter they're using is, you know, automatically a ghost. And they're presenting this to the public, you know, that this is scientific proof because they're holding an experimental device in their hand, and it's not. When you have a whole world of high EMF, like, we're just surrounded by EMF everywhere. Even our own brain and our own bodies give off EMF. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'm not sure what kind of levels that we give off, like, from our own bodies and things like that, but I'm sure at a certain level it'll affect things. And, I don't know, it's just, what bothers me is the equipment. And, you know, like I said, if the intent is to go in there and to help people, you know, tell them, this is what's affecting you, that's great. But don't go in there and say, because a couple of numbers jump on your meter, it's a ghost.
Why not? You weren't there, man. You weren't there. It got cold.
Yeah. So that's just my whole thing. And I'm not saying you should rule that out completely, like that it shouldn't be out of the question. But you would have to really do solid testing. Like, take that person who's experiencing something, like, for example, and if they were willing enough, like, blanket them to block all EMFs around them. and see if they're still experiencing the things they're experiencing, if you can block out the majority of the EMS. And if they're still experiencing stuff, even though you blocked out the majority of that, maybe you got something.
Well, yeah. Well, and here again, even if you get something, it still doesn't define a ghost. It just means that you've got something.
Right.
It means that you've got something neat. Yeah. If you design a way that 100% blocks out any magnetic fields and you stick a meter in this device that blocks out 100% of magnetic fields, radio waves, what have you, and you record something inside of that, well, then cool. You know, hey, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it a ghost. It's just interesting. And from there, you work forward.
Yeah.
I kind of get on you and I are running parallel. You have
tonight we are.
Yeah. You have one side that upsets you, and you kind of see the problem with. And the problem that I have is the other side of it. You know, in practice, you see this as a problem. In conclusion, I see it as a problem. I'm not saying that something interesting is not happening. I'm not saying that a simple explanation is the cause and the answer to everything. It's when you jump from I don't know what it is to therefore it must be a ghost. That's where I always kind of lose people. I have much more respect and I have much more profound understanding when someone tells me, you know, we do this, we've done this at several places, we've repeated it, we're getting these very interesting results. I don't know why. This is outside the norm of what we should be expected. This statistically is significant, other than, you know, ruling it out that the probability on a probability scale would say that we should not get this. We should only get this 5 times out of 100.
Right.
You know, that's the probability, 0.05. That's the counting to standard. So probability of, you know, 0.5, 5 times out of 100, we should see this type of behavior at random chance. But you know what? We're getting it 35 times out of 100. We're getting it 40 times out of 100. I mean, that's really kind of blown it up there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, hey, you know, that's something. You know, that's very interesting. That's very unique. And that's exciting. That's exciting. The unknown is exciting. Just say you don't know what it is. just go with it. You can say, hey, this type of response that we get with this type of equipment is consistent with reports of hauntings. That I roll with 100%. Consistent reports of haunting. These are our findings. They're consistent with these type of scenarios. That's awesome, because I think that you're not locking it down into an explanation or a definition of something that hasn't been tested, much less hasn't even been proven to exist. And you're still leaving it open. You're still taking a very open-minded look at the information that's in front of you.
Right. And the thing that really bothers me, Tim, is there's not enough people testing the validity of our research. When you go into an investigation, like, you go in there and they place their equipment down, and like, I just don't see enough like testing. Like take Bill Hyland, for example. Here's a guy who literally takes every single piece of equipment that he can get his hands on and say, listen, you know, there's a theory of battery drainage. When you go into an investigation, these batteries drain. And he went out there and he did a full, like gung-ho, like, kind of testing thing. And he came up with a great way of testing battery drainage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of these groups are just going into places, just sitting around. And because I'm watching these videos, and you just sit there and you just like, I say it over and over, and I'm like, get up off your butt and investigate why you heard that noise. Why do you smell that smell? Why did that happen? go and investigate it. Take notes. Document it. Collect data. You know, I don't see people doing this stuff. And that's what bothers me about, you know, these modern-day investigations. They're taking equipment that they think works because other people are using it, or they've seen it work on TV. And that's the part about these things that bother me. You know, let's go back, you know, like I did today or during the week. I went back and did my homework. I wanted to know the origin of EMF. Who is the one who came up with the hypothesis that, you know, there's something paranormal in correlation to EMF? And, you know, I did my homework. I did my research. Go and do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I completely understand. And the research, I kind of think, lends itself to, at least on this side of it, what we're looking at. You know, I can interpret that research different than someone else can. You know, I also interpret it as this. I'm open enough to the fact. Okay, if you think about if this guy says, okay, there's a high correlation, and I hate using correlation because, you know me and correlation means squat. But it's a good place to start. So there's a high correlation of magnetic fields in places that people say, I have paranormal experiences. That's awesome. You know, he's looking at it as maybe you have stimuli to the brain. I can feel, you know, I can see that. And I'm kind of, you know, I can go with that. However, you can still say you still have interesting data. You still, okay, so what's causing these areas to have high readings, even if it's natural? Could be something completely earth-related or, you know, natural-related. But still, why is that place high if, you know, if there's no problems in the house or problems in the facility? You know, what's causing that?
Yeah.
How come you have that? What's going on with the area? What is it about this area that has a concentration of a higher than what we might say relatively normal magnetic activity? It could be nothing. It could be nothing paranormal at all. But even taking that type of research and going a little bit further and try to find out why a place would have higher magnetic or higher EMF readings than a place on a natural level.
Yep.
That's the type of really digging into the research that I like. And I think that if you can find that, then that's applicable across the board to other places where you see correlations between EMF hits and experiences of paranormal activity.
I mean, I'm going to give people this.
I mean, do it. Matt.
is the majority of the time we're not going to be able to have a whole investigation in a 100% controlled environment. We don't have a laboratory where we have a room made of glass. You know, we don't have a laboratory that's made of metal. We're not going to be able to block or completely, you know, avoid contamination as much as possible. Like, let's face it, when you go into a private home, nobody's going to shut their power off just so you can come in and investigate their house. You know, a museum, you're going to go into a museum, they're not going to shut their power down so you can go in and investigate. Therefore, my thing is, a lot of these tools and equipment that we're currently using are like kind of meaningless because there's a lot of things that interfere with our modern day experimental equipment that we are still continuing to use. And therefore, I think we should just kind of like say at some point, all right, this isn't working. This isn't saying this is proof. I'm not, you know, and again, I'm not saying we're going to be in our lifetime to say that there are ghosts, or if there aren't ghosts, that there are or not. But what I'm saying is, like I said before, let's move forward from that point and say, well, what devices and what research can we get into that we can stop doing that and just say, all right, You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope I'm not coming off like an asshole, but
no. No, I think, you know, you're not to me, and you might be to somebody that's like, oh, really just sucked into the MF thing. And what also I hear you saying, which I hope other people would hear, is that you're just questioning it. You're not saying this is a cause of anything. And I like it's delving deeper into the cause. I think that's what will, exactly as you said, move stuff forward. If you have correlations and just say, and again, I hate correlations, but if you have that, you see that, people can report that. It's anecdotal, sure, but you know, you're working with it. That's all you got. Find out, you know, what else happens with places with high MS. Why does that happen? How can you change it if it's even possible to change? You know, what can you do to deflect some of them, to end people's experiences? And if you did do that, would it stop the experiences? And if you could change the environment in some manner that for whatever natural reasons they were having high MF, say they built some type of Faraday cage around their house, you know, so if you could have some type of way to block most of it, what if they still continue to have paranormal experiences? I mean, could you then go, oh, well,
great.
You know, we were, yeah, it is great. But I was going to say, you could look at it and say, oh, well, we were wrong about this all along. This has nothing to do with it. It's something else. It's something other than what we thought it was at first.
It's
But the great thing to take away from it is because correlation is what it is. Some people stop at correlation, you know, and they think, well, there's enough correlation. It must be causation. I'm not going to dig anymore. And, you know, that's dangerous. And that's the end of it. There could be something else there. And the easy find is high MF. The harder find might be something completely different than what you originally started out thinking. Test, and retest, and that's what that's all about.
All right, I've vented about that. I feel better.
Yeah, I'm just getting all wound up.
Yeah, right. We're on a roll. So
we are on a roll.
Our other topics tonight, which you know, we don't want to get too far into that, as me and Tim can ramble on into things. As you just heard, that was a prime example. But we're going to talk about cynics and skepticism because, like I always said to Kenny, who's a really good friend of mine and yours, of course, he's on our show from time to time. Skeptics get a bad rep, and. You know, I'm kind of getting tired of people bashing skeptics, like we're the bullies and we pick on people. It's not a matter of picking on people. It's not a matter of, like, coming across like a jerk or, you know, like we're teasing you. It's none of that. We're questioning things to improve the paranormal community so that we can move forward instead of, like I was bringing up before, instead of using all the same crap over and over and over, if it's not really getting us anywhere, not really getting us answers, because it's still not proof, then, you know, I don't know. So, Tim, what's your definition of a cynic? I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on a what's a cynic?
A curmudgeon. I kind of think a cynic is somebody that just absolutely believes in nothing else other than what could benefit them and nothing else. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's, you know, cynics, I think even cynics believe in things. But I think that a cynic tends to believe in things that only benefit their needs,
yeah.
Whatever their needs are at the time. You know, no, I haven't met anybody, and I'm sure I probably have met some people that came close to it, but like I said, I haven't met somebody that doesn't believe in anything.
But would you really call them a cynic?
What's that?
Like, if they don't, I mean, if they believe in something, but only for themselves. The definition kind of confuses me a little bit. You know, because like part of it says they only believe in things that benefit themselves, but at the same time, you know.
Oh, hey, I got it right.
Yes.
Well, sure. I mean, if somebody believes, again, I don't think everybody is completely skeptical. I don't believe everybody is completely cynical. I don't think you can be 100% one or the other. Cynics to me just are, you know, I'm thinking just off my feeling here. They don't want to accept something because it would either take away their position, harm their financial, harm their social status, you know, or just they just don't want to. They just don't like the idea. You know, they just don't want to believe it. And maybe it might interfere with their psychological or emotional view of the world. It might the religious or faith view of the world or of their
kind of like Jehovah's Witness.
Nope. Or kind of like, you know, just of their environment.
No offense to those who might be.
So, I mean, you're doing something paranormal. Somebody that would just absolutely take no step into an open mind policy whatsoever, just because. And now disagreeing with something is completely different, I think, than being cynical about it. I think being cynical would mean I don't believe it. I'm not going to listen to any evidence or whatever discussion you have to say about it. I can't believe that. There's something about that probably intrinsically to that person that they do not want to or they cannot accept a truth, or at least the option that it might be true. And I think that could go both ways. Just to throw it out there because we're kind of there on religion and stuff. So what about demons? You know, let's just throw out demons. Demons...
That's another good example, too, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, do demons really exist? I don't know. Do they? I mean, we hear that they do, but do they? So people have extremely horrific experiences with things, but is it a demon that they had an experience with? I don't know. It's something that matches the definition of what they've been told a demon is, whatever experience that they have, therefore they believe it's a demon. But could somebody in a religious faith position say there's no such thing as hell? There's no such thing as a devil. There's no such thing as demons. Could they say it? Could they be open to it? You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that there are. I'm certainly not. So I'm not going to mention any specific religion because I don't want to go there. I don't want to. You know, yeah. I'm just saying a good example would be, you know, could someone of a faith based, real strong belief say, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in demons. I don't believe in them. I don't know. Could they? It would be open to say I would be open to listening to it, but I don't know. So I think someone might take a cynical view, and I think that would be kind of like an example of a cynical view of existence or the non-existence of demons. You know, they couldn't do it.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Well, here's another good example, Tim, for you. Years ago, when I was a school bus driver, back between 2003 and 2005, it's going back quite a bit, I had an attendant. I drove special needs bus, you know, for special needs children. And they were great kids. I had awesome kids. They were amazing kids. And the attendant that worked for me at the time, she was a great person. caring, giving. You know, she looked after the kids for me on the bus. She was great to the kids. I had no problems with her, you know, whatsoever. I had no personal issues. We had great conversations every day. Until one day.
There's always a one day.
Halloween was coming up. And we were talking about, you know, Halloween and all these things. And she goes, "We don't celebrate Halloween." I'm like, "What do you mean you don't celebrate Halloween?" And she, you know, it's in her religion that she doesn't celebrate Halloween. You know, she doesn't have her kid go out and get candy and, you know, wear costumes. They stay at home and they don't celebrate it. And in my head, I didn't say nothing to her because I didn't want to really, like, step on her toes, you know, religiously. And, you know, I didn't want to, like, pry or anything like that, even though we knew each other, you know, a little bit. And I didn't want to get in, again, I didn't want to get into that part of, you know, because that's like...
Yeah, it's all respect thing.
Yeah, it's out of respect, and it's kind of awkward to kind of approach people in that subject. You know, I don't preach my religion to people, and, you know, I don't expect them to, you know, to do the same to me. So, but in my head, I'm like, I never heard of anybody not celebrating Halloween. You know, Halloween is actually the celebration of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think her religion kind of like knows that. I've never heard of any religions like not celebrate Halloween. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, wow, I just couldn't believe it. You know, like that poor kid, he's got to like sit at home every Halloween. He can't dress up and go out and get candy.
So did you think on like a cynical, like she.
Like from a cynical point of view is. Kind of like what I'm getting at, it kind of relates to like what you were talking about, how they're brought up religiously, you know, cause they think it's going to affect them like in different ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think maybe that's why like they didn't celebrate Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, through, and of course that's the right. And with all respect, yeah, I agree. You know, I would wonder, you know, if that person would be open to listening to ideas, not changing their mind, you know, not saying, you know, saying, taking the stance that I'm open to hear what you have to say. I think once you do that and you do that in earnest, I think you're not being cynical, even though you might say, you know, I'm really rooted in my beliefs. I really am. But I will give you my honest attention and listen to your opinion and see what you have to say. I think that is opening your mind and taking a skeptical view of your position, which, you know, which sounds, of course, to us, you know, sounds like, which would be considered normal, but you know they would actually be taking a skeptical view of your beliefs,
right?
And I think that's fair. I think that's a fair game. I think that's fair rules played across the board there.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I kind of think about cynicism and skepticism. And I think people confuse questioning and asking for evidence as being cynical, instead of being skeptical. So they might say, "Well, provide evidence that my kid won't have any harm spiritually from taking candy."
Right.
And you could say, "Well, I can't guarantee they won't have physical harm taking candy from strangers, but I don't know about spiritual."
Right. Yeah. So I thought it was kind of a different approach or point of view,
mm-hmm.
you know, with cynicism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I brought that little story up. But, you know, it kind of saddens me a little that the poor kid couldn't, you know, celebrate Halloween. I mean, you know, because like when I grew up, every kid I knew celebrated Halloween. So I just kind of thought it was weird that was the first time in my life that I ever heard of somebody not celebrating something that's like globally known, you know?
Uh-huh. It's different.
Yeah, different.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was an intense story. I know it was kind of got into it.
That's all right. You know, every time I'm on the show, my Facebook usually loses about 2 or 3 Facebook likes. So, you know, I'm used to my opinion not being popular.
Well, it's, you know, our goal for the show, again, you know, if we have any new listeners, we're not trying to, like, discourage anybody. We're not trying to, you know, tell everybody that we don't want to believe in ghosts. We're not trying to tell you, you know, not to venture into researching and testing equipment. We're not trying to do that in any way. That's not our goal. Our goal is just to, our goal is to educate our listeners.
Get you to think every now and then.
Yeah, just use critical thinking and, you know, let's all get together in the step in the right direction. And that's, you know, I'm just coming from experience and trying to guide you into that good direction, because there's not enough learning. And I think learning is a big part of what we do. Mm-hmm. And that's what our show's about. You know, Tim and I learn just as much as our listeners learn on this show. You know, when we have a guest come on our show, we learn a lot from them.
I do. It's one of my favorite things about doing this show is all the people I get to listen to.
Yeah. So.
Yep. I'm open all the time.
You know, we're kind of doing a little bit of different of a format. You know, Tim and I talked about it a little bit, and we said we're actually not going to focus so much on guests. We're going to have guests once a month. We're still going to have guests. We're going to have
still have Kenny.
Yeah, we'll still have Kenny once in a while.
I'll stick Kenny in there every now and then.
But we're going to try to focus on our on-the-air personalities. We're going to try to get more into topics and try to reach our listeners more. And I think our show will kind of get its own personality and character that way. And, you know, because we got some feedback recently, and it kind of touched me a little bit, because I got to watch, like, certain – one thing I want people to understand is radio is not easy. You know, sitting back here in my own home, even though I'm on my laptop, and, you know, a lot of radio shows make it look easy, but it's not. You know, when we have...
Yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. But, you know, when we have guests come on, some of our guests throw us, you know, they'll throw us, like, for a loop. And
yeah, we had one guy came on, I think he was intoxicated, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That was.
I won't say who he was.
No, I won't say who he was either. But it was a loop.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you sit here, and like Tim's in West Virginia. I'm in New York. So it's not like I can go and look at him, and we're not looking at one another. So the only form of communication we have is behind the scenes, like either text or.
We text. Oh my God, Matt! I think he's drunk.
Yeah,
you got this. I gotta go.
So yeah, we get into things like that because let's put it this way, unexpected things always pop up.
Yeah, but you know, and the good thing to take away from it was I'm not sure if she's listening or she will listen, but I gotta say, I mean, that was great, and that's what we asked for, is really good feedback. And that was perfect.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because we can't get better. I would do this for fun. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy listening to people, get to meet different people. But, you know, I really want to do a good show. And, you know, want to make people happy when they listen. I want to bring new points of view to people. And it's the feedback that helps us do that.
Yeah. So if we're not aware of, like, certain things, we're not going to know to change them, and that's why feedback is important to us. So if you're, you know something that we don't know, we want to know. Anyway.
So yeah, we hit skepticism. Let's do some, we hit cynicism.
Yeah, now we're at skepticism.
Yeah, we got to do some skepticism, which I like. Mm-hmm. So, that, you know, you can't always be 100% skeptic, can you? I mean, could you? Is that possible? I don't know if it's possible.
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Well,
at some point, maybe.
I think
you could be 100% skeptical on an issue. But could you imagine your life if you made every decision based on an order of research and evaluation? I mean, there's just some things you just go with.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you probably do some evaluation. Recently, I was in Washington, D.C., kind of was walking through, and I really like Washington, D.C. It was so nice walking through the town or the city. It was great, and I really wanted to hit up a food vendor on the street because I like that kind of stuff. I like going, you know, when I go to the city, I guess because I'm from the country, the food vendors on the street just fascinate me, and I want to go get one of those hot dogs and hopefully not catch anything. But, you know, even then, though, maybe on a smaller level, you know, you kind of walk across and you're watching the food vendors and you're kind of seeing which ones look clean, you know, which ones people are going to more than other ones. So, you know, I guess there are some level of evaluation and cost-benefit analysis to everything. But, you know, could you imagine, like, sitting there going, you know, should I have this hot dog? I wonder what type of research has been done about the benefits of the health and the risk to my, the detriment of my health if I have this hot dog. And you know what I'm saying?
I don't know how healthy a hot dog is.
Right. But you make an assumption. And I think it's probably a pretty safe assumption that hot dogs are really not good for you.
Although according to, I think it was a Subway commercial I saw that, they said, well, if you ate Subway every day, there was this, like, 300-pound man, and he lost 200 pounds because he ate Subway every day.
Ah, yeah. I think I would be skeptical on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
I ate 12-foot-long subs today. I still gained weight. I guess I didn't eat enough.
Oh, boy.
I think it's really good to be skeptic, especially even if minute – In questioning, let's move it up a notch from the everyday to hearing claims. And I think if somebody puts out a claim, I think that's when you should put on your skeptic hat. Not a cynic hat, but a skeptic hat. Put that puppy on and, like, look at the claims and think about the claim. I don't think it shows any disrespect to anybody. And correct me if I'm wrong, because this is just my world, you know, this is my point, this is my worldview. So my understanding is I don't think it's disrespectful to anybody to look at something with a questioning mind, especially if they make a claim. So if someone puts out a claim, I have done X, and by doing X, I have produced Y, and with the production of Y, I have proved Z. So you look at this.
Yeah.
And so when you see that claim, I don't think it's disrespectful to look at that claim and then go back and say, well, you know, you said X. Tell me about X. What did you do? How did you obtain X when you did this? What was your research on? What was your initial question? And I think sometimes in the paranormal, like you said earlier, people confuse cynics with skeptics. It's because they don't like those questions.
I don't think they like being questioned at all, and a lot of people just get defensive. I know I do at times, like, not even just in the paranormal thing, but, mm-hmm. like, in general, like, if somebody's, like, inquisitive about something, like, a bit much, like, I know a person can get a little defensive on the defensive side. So,
that's normal. Yeah.
Yeah, that's normal. But what I'm saying is, and then I think that's why half the times these conversations between, you know, believers and skeptics and cynics get heated because people get defensive thinking they're questioning you, and they're not looking at it like healthy wise. They're not looking at it from a healthy point of view. They're looking at it, who's this guy? What's this guy's background? Why is he questioning me about this? And mm-hmm. I think that's why a lot of these conversations get heated.
Yeah, well, I agree. And I think it's unfortunate because it's the questioning that I think will make the community better. It just, to me, and again, that's my opinion, I just think it's the questioning, it's the wanting to understand what's behind the idea and what gave rise to an idea. I don't think you're putting anybody down. At least that's my opinion. I don't feel it. You know, if I would put out a claim, I wouldn't feel it. I would hope that somebody would question me. I would actually be kind of disappointed if somebody didn't. So I might be seeing this totally different than what somebody in some other culture would see it. I don't understand it. The only thing that I could see is where the conflict might happen is exactly what you're saying. I think conflict begins when you ask a question and that person who made that claim can't answer that question. And once that person can't answer that question, it becomes, I think it loses its dialogue to a place where that person would go to a defensive stance and feel attacked. And even if it wasn't an honest attack, the feeling could be that they are being attacked. And once someone goes from discussion to defense mode, I think things escalate quickly and go sideways and end up in a direction that nobody had the intention to go.
Yeah, and if people got more on board with peer review, which is a lot of along the lines of skepticism, because you're questioning things under a peer review, and it's being analyzed by other peers in the paranormal community, like, why wouldn't you want that? Like, if you want to prove something that you think you have something that's interesting, I'd want that even more. Like, I want more people to be looking at my stuff that I think could be something, because if it's not, well, I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and I think if you get asked a question, I believe maybe this might be an important misconception. However, I think if you're asked a question of what you did and how you got this finding or what does it mean, I think I don't know is a perfectly good answer. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, I have no clue how this happened. I'm just telling you, I pieced together X, I got Y, and based on those two, the best conclusion I can come to is Z. And, you know, you ask that question, I don't know. I think that's great because I think that invites that person who might actually know something that you missed to have a discussion and fix whatever problem it is. And if you can account for a variable that somebody notices and you redesign it and you take into account and you exclude or you control for that variable and you still get the same answer, that ups the credibility. I think that ups the validity of what you're testing. More information, more redefining your experiment, or more redefining what you're doing to look at this. I think it's great. I think I don't know is fine. On the flip side of that, I'll say that there are some people that once they find somebody, and I think this kind of goes to cynicism, I think once somebody can find a person who can't answer a question, I think that then they dismiss that person altogether. I think once, you know, if somebody says, I don't know, which I think is a great answer, by the way, because I think I don't know is a door of many opportunities. But once somebody would say, I don't know, then somebody would throw up their hand and say, you know, you don't know what you're doing. Therefore, because you don't know the answer to this one question, your whole design is flawed. And that's dangerous, too.
There's something else that's dangerous, too, Tim. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to add to this is because Carolyn, who we've had on as a guest, she's the writer of Carolyn Creepy Corner. very popular blog. She's a very well-known author out there in the field. But she's in the chat room. I want to say hello to the ladies out there, Mary Lou and Carolyn. How you guys doing? She brought up a good point. You know, if one link of the chain is broken, it threatens their belief as a whole, and that is threatening to some people. And as much as I agree with that 100%, however, this is where I think people should kind of like leave their beliefs at the door. There's nothing wrong with wanting to believe. All right, if you're in a community and you're just having a discussion and you're wanting to believe in something, that's fine. But when I talk about danger, Tim, is when you have a team that, say, for example, does nothing but want to believe in what we're doing, going into a private home who's scared out of their wits, they don't know what's going on with their situation, and they just want it out of their house. It's scaring them, and it's frightening to their children. And you have a team go in there with the belief or the notion before they go into the house, and if that gets into the mind of these people who are already scared, and we've talked about this, you know, quite a few times, Tim.
Yeah.
But what bothers me is that you're taking now your personal belief going into a private home, and you're making the situation even more worse because you're adding and building to their own fear that's already there.
Yeah. Yeah. And what if your beliefs don't match the homeowner's, or let's just say the person that called you? I mean, how do you reconcile with that person? How do you reconcile? What if you, again, just to use as an example, not putting it out there, not saying anything, but just say, what if you are taking, what if you are approaching an investigation as a faith-based belief organization, which is fine, and you then have someone that is identified with no belief in any faith-based whatsoever. They just don't believe it, which is fine. And you know, investigation group A that is a follower of faith-based, therefore gives as a conclusion to the cause of the events in the house to a spiritual entity, be it a demon, angel, something. What are they going to do when that person says, no, those aren't real? I mean, are they going to argue with them? I mean, are you going to say, well, yeah, you're wrong. You know, however you were brought up, wherever you were, you're wrong. I mean, what do you do? How do you reconcile a belief with somebody that doesn't hold that belief when you're attributing a cause only to your belief? What do you do? You've promised, you've entered into some type of, I won't say contract, but into an agreed arrangement with somebody that you go into that place and say, I will help you. I will find the cause of what's causing your fear. And then you come back with a faith-based answer. And if that person has no grounds for any belief in that faith, what do you do? What do you do? Do you just say, well, I couldn't help you, which would be actually the proper thing to do and say, I'm sorry, we're going to pack up shop. Good luck next time. Or do you argue with them?
Move out.
But you know what I'm saying? It's how do you reconcile an answer when it's based in belief, which is if two people hold the same beliefs, it probably would work. But if two people held completely opposing different beliefs, which I just repeated myself, but opposing beliefs, I mean, how do you reconcile between the two?
It's hard. It is. Okay. You go into a private home and again, like you said, you know, if you have a group that, you know, it's faith-based, or you have a group that's not, and then these people who are religious and, you know, they believe these things, this and that, it's hard. It really is, because you have to treat it so delicately. I wouldn't even, if it was me, if I couldn't handle the case, I wouldn't even do it. That would be number one. I'd just completely avoid it. I'd pass it on to a team that would be more experienced in handling that situation, or, you know, tell them, you know, maybe we can help you find another group that's better than we are, more experienced, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know if I would, like, hit so much on the religious part of things. I would maybe just, you really got to kind of come from, like, a psychological point of view, because it is. A lot of it's, like, more psychological than anything else.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I brought up a case that I did this year, late last year and into this year. These people kept calling us in over and over and over because it was, you know, scared out of their minds and they didn't know what was going on. And, you know, she's like, you know, I pray, you know, that this goes away and I don't want this to affect my husband anymore and this and that. And, you know, we kept going in there and in all honesty, no matter how many times we go in there, it's not gonna make it go away. You know, it was unfortunately it's a situation where he had an ability. We learned that he had an ability, and we think it's surrounding him, not so much the house. And we think that he's sensitive, and that there are things that are always going to be around him, no matter where he goes and what he does. So we had to go in there, and it wasn't so much a religious thing, but more of a psychological thing, because we had to go in there and tell them, you know, this is how you handle this, this is how you handle that. It was a real intense situation because, like I said, the wife was very religious and she was praying a lot, and I kind of avoided the whole religious thing with her, and I just kind of dealt with it more like from a psychological point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if what I said made sense, but...
Yeah, I got it. You know, I was going to say, you know, not too long ago, maybe about a year or so ago, I began reading on different sites that some of our friends are on, that people just don't do private investigations anymore. And I remember thinking, you know, that's interesting to me because, you know, I think, you know, people are there to help. And so, you know, I kind of took a seat back and I read a lot of different opinions over the last year or so. And I'm really beginning to understand the position that people take when they just say, we just don't do home investigations, period, anymore. Because my understanding is, you don't know how you're going to reconcile with people. You don't know how you're going to fix things. If you're going to go in, you go in and you enter into an agreement. And if you can't put that family in a position of complete understanding and acceptance of what's going on, whatever it is, then you're doing more harm than good. Carolyn again mentioned in the chat room just now, you know, that's kind of where I am. And that's what we do on our website. And that's what we do, you know, we up front just go ahead and tell you, look, we're just going to look for logical explanations. I have not seen anything that would ever give me belief that there's such thing as ghosts. Not saying that they're not real. I'm just telling you up front, you know, if you've got something goofy going on in your house, then it's probably environmentally controlled. If not environmentally, then it's probably psychologically, like kind of what you ended up being, whether it be an ability or an undiagnosed mental illness. And if you see an undiagnosed mental illness, that kind of goes back to our conversation with our attorney. You know, if you miss that, then you've potentially done harm if you don't know what you've just seen.
Yep.
And then that person continues to suffer psychologically, or the family continues to suffer psychologically because they thought they could just get a ghost hunting group to come in or a paranormal investigation team to come in and fix what's going on by some type of removal, prayer, you know, hang some crystals, burn some sage. Boy, we talked about that last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and bless the house, throw some oil on it.
Mm-hmm.
you know,
vegetable
that type
oil?
Of stuff. Yeah, vegetable, you know, which you want. You want the good stuff, like the olive oil that's good for your heart. It comes back to, what if that family doesn't believe that? And that's kind of where I was, I guess, kind of speaking from where I'm leading myself to more.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to throw that in there quick.
Yeah, what if that family doesn't believe it? What if they say, man, look, we called you in. We didn't know you were going to burn this stuff in my house. We don't want crystals on our doorway. We don't appreciate faith based. We don't want, you know, crosses put in holy oil on our walls.
Not only that, Tim, some of the stuff that you burn in people's houses can actually affect people's health. The clients I just kind of told you about before, he had a stent put in him. And, you know, she was afraid of any sage and stuff like that, like, kind of bothering, you know, his medical conditions. You know, so you got that, too.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not there yet, but I'm kind of like what Carolyn, I think we're probably at the same place. I'm very upfront. And yep. A lot of times if people call and ask, I'll tell them, I'll say, look, I'm not going to come in your place and tell you you have a ghost. If I cannot find an explanation for what's going on in your house, I will still not tell you you have a ghost. The only way I'm going to tell you you have some type of ghost haunting your house is if that ghost shows up, comes up to me, and gives me a interview and agrees to come back with somebody else. And do, you know, I want it. You know what I'm saying? I want some really solid evidence. Otherwise, I'm not telling you have a ghost. I'm not telling you have a demon. I'm not telling you have a troll that lives underneath the steps going to your basement. I'm not telling you any of that. I'm not telling you have pixies. I'm not telling you have fairies. I'm not telling you nothing. I will tell you I have no clue how come your doors open and close at night and you hear voices. What I will tell you is if I can't find out why you hear voices in the middle of the night, I will make a call to a mental health agency that is local for you to help you, or I will give you literature about places you can go to talk to somebody that is professional that deals with people hearing voices. Which doesn't mean you're crazy. It just means that there's a probability that you've got something going on, that you're hearing something that nobody else is hearing or experiencing. It doesn't make you crazy. It doesn't make it paranoid. It just means that you might want to talk to somebody.
Yeah. Well, I do want to share that that investigation, which I told you about privately in our conversation, you know, aside from the show, Tim, that was the one I told you about that was attached to, I don't want to say it out in public, but it was attached to things that we couldn't speak in public about. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So they're doing well. They're handling it. You know, they're doing great. They call us up from time to time saying, "Oh, things are great." They haven't complained about anything. So I feel like my wife and I mostly did that investigation. Well, our colleague Brian, one of my other partners that we work with, he was with us with the first investigation there. But they're doing really good, and it makes me feel good that I did my job. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
and giving people a way to reconcile is sometimes just what they need.
Yep, exactly. So that's what I'm all about. I'm all about trying to do the right thing, Tim, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what. So, I don't know. Getting out of the wire. We have a few minutes left, but I want to always take the time to thank those who tuned in tonight. I want to thank the ladies in the chat room, Mary Lou and Carolyn, for their input and their wisdom. It's always a pleasure to have people participate in our chat room. Don't forget, it's free to join Blog Talk Radio. Anytime you guys want to register, it's free. And you guys know me. If it's free, it's for me. So
I can afford free.
Hell yeah. Well, I'm hoping to get a good guest for next week. He hasn't confirmed yet, but I'm working on confirmation. Hopefully I'll get an email within a day or two. But we are supposed to get the author of the Brownsville Road Demon. His name is Bob Cranmer, I think if I have his last name pronounced correctly. Again, you know, that's one of the hardest things in radio also is pronouncing people's names.
That's why I let you do it.
You know,
unless it's Smith.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's awkward to kind of like just ask them, how do you pronounce your name? But we're going to have the author of the Brownsville Road Demon, which is basically about a house that was allegedly reported to have demonic activity. And this politician lived in this house for some time with this kind of activity for a while. And he became good friends with renowned exorcist Adam Bly, which I admire greatly. I like his work a lot. I met him in person. And so he's our guest next week, and I really can't wait. I hope he does confirm, because that's going to be an intense episode. If he's anything like Adam Bly, I expect nothing but a really interesting show. So I expect it be interesting. So
anything with demons is always interesting.
Always.
Always.
Hopefully we won't have technical difficulty, because every time we have, like when we had Robbie Lunt, remember? We had problems at that episode.
Definitely, that was a demon.
Had to be.
There's no other possible explanation.
Oh, boy. And again, I want to, you know, just remind everybody, I'm looking for volunteers for my documentary that I'm filming. I'm filming a documentary called Darksiders. It's about helping investigators who claim that they feel a spirit or a ghost follow them home from an investigation that they did. And if they feel that they're being followed home, my wife and I had a 2-year attachment that we felt we had an attachment from an investigation that we did. And, you know, it was a hell of a 2 years. And you know, we had people come in and actually helped us. Tim, what was funny about the situation was, you know, we're investigators, always trying to help people. We were like, how the hell do we help ourselves? You know?
Well, yeah.
So
being inside the bubble is different.
Yeah, we had to reach out, you know, to more experienced people than ourselves. And, you know, so that's kind of like what the film's about. And it's about not only, you know, do things follow you home and can attach to you, but it's about how investigators can help one another. I want to help you with your situation, that if you do feel that you have something attached to you, you know, I can help you with your situation. So if you're in the local area, New Jersey, Long Island, Connecticut, Staten Island, upstate New York, you know, I'm looking for volunteers. If you're having an ongoing experience and you feel something's attached to you, I want to try to film your experience. And, yeah, so hit me up, paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com or islandparanormalsociety@gmail.com. And, I don't know. Anything else to add, Tim?
Have a great weekend.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys.
And as always, thanks for the feedback we got earlier.
Yeah.
We're working on that, and more feedback is always appreciated.
Definitely. Good night, everybody. Have a good weekend. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Oh, man.
All right, guys. See you next time.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Don't be intimidated by the hosts. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? Register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.